This is Anthony Anarino, and you're listening to In the Arena.
Step into the arena. Give it all that you got. Into the arena. It's time to make it your best shot. Chase the dream and break the scene. Your opportunity is right here. It's right here. It's right now. Welcome to my arena.
Hey, brother, how are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. Great to be with you.
It's good to have you here on the In the Arena podcast. There's not a better guest for a podcast titled In the Arena than Dan Waldschmidt. Let me go back 1 year or so ago. You'll know the exact date. And you and I covered this ground on a Google Hangout with some people there, but I want to cover it again here. You called me and started talking to me about an ultra event I did riding a bicycle across Death Valley, and you were asking questions. And then you revealed to me that you had decided to do an ultra event yourself. And what was the distance that you were attempting to run in 24 hours?
We started off doing 125 miles. And then as we got closer to the event, we said, what if we amped it up to 180 and broke the world record? How cool would that be? So, I mean, we were completely clueless, not knowing how really difficult that is.
That's my favorite part, is how clueless you were. What was your longest run going up to that?
Well, I'd run a couple half marathons, and accumulative, yeah, I mean, that's it. Yeah, you're laughing.
I laughed then. I'm like, Dan, you know, there's intermediate steps between, you know, the world record and a half marathon.
Yeah, I kind of don't think about it that way. I think I'm like, if I want to go get it, let's go get it, you know?
I know that about you. That's why you're here, and that's why I love you. And you crashed and burned, but this is, to me, the most fascinating part of the story. At what mile?
It's like 71 and a half.
71 and a half is insane. That's an insane to go from 13 to 71 and a half.
It is. Looking back, I mean, looking back, it's like, what was I thinking? I was so disappointed, dude. I was crestfallen, and everybody around me was like, you're an idiot, dude. Do you know what you just did?
And you didn't.
So
you didn't.
I did not. No, I didn't. Now I do. Now I'm like, wow, that was pretty darn cool. So
it's amazing. This is a good intro to talking about EDGY, because EDGY is an acronym that you use, and we'll play with the letters and go through them. But the first one is extreme behavior, and you exhibit that. And the book starts by, you know, it starts with one story about your personal life and how you came to this situation. And it's an emotional story. It shows tremendous vulnerability, and I want people to read it just for that story to understand where you came from and then the ground that you've covered since then. But the book really, when you look at the individual that reads it and what they're going to get out of it, it's a prescriptive book. It says, here are the things that are going to allow you to succeed, and they're not what you think they are. But it starts with E, extreme behavior. Give me, how did you come across understanding that it started with E, with this extreme behavior? And give me an example of that outside of the crazy one we just used.
So I stumbled onto extreme behavior in observing how people who didn't appear to deserve to be successful, and that almost sounds harsh, but you know, people who didn't have a college degree, people who didn't have an MBA, people who didn't have the last name Trump, it was kind of like, well, you know, you're relegated to the middle class, right? You're relegated to being a weekend warrior, not an Olympic athlete. And what I learned was that, I mean, I was dead wrong. that with enough extreme behavior, enough effort specifically, because that was the biggest extreme behavior, ordinary dudes could achieve outrageous things. In fact, one of the quotes we say in the book is that effort's a great equalizer. We just learned that, you know, ordinary people can compensate and really make up for almost any other weakness by putting in lots and lots and lots and lots amount of effort, which is interesting too, because in today's society, we hear a lot about, hey, we need to work smarter. And, you know, we've got some amazing new assets like AngelList, and we've got mentor programs. I sit on the board of a couple. I know you do too. You're heavily involved in mentoring and training. And all that stuff we do, we don't even get paid to do it. We just do it because we enjoy, we love the game we're in. And, you know, we have all these discussions about optimizing your presentation and doing a certain way, you know, to working smarter, how to do, you know, don't waste your time doing this, do it this way. We forget that one of the, you know, greatest assets we have is just one of the dumbest. And it's just good old fashioned sweat. And it takes that guy who is kind of chubby, it doesn't even look like he's a winner, and puts him on the finish line ahead of everybody else. If you can put in the time and the effort, it's not a matter of if you'll be successful. It's a matter of how big will your success be.
It's brute force. It's just overwhelming the system and saying, I'm just going to continue to push on.
Well, that's right. And, you know, and I get the fact that, you know, once you're successful, you look back, you know, you kind of look at success a little differently. You say, man, what could I have done better? What could I have done, you know, with a little more finesse? But that's not where you start. That's where you finish. You finish saying, I'm going to work smarter. You'll figure out how to work smart when you're tired and you don't have enough room to do everything you want to do. Then you'll automatically figure out how to be smart. But that's not where you start. That's where you finish. And I think the example of that is Harlan Sanders, who, you know, guy that we all know. We know the story, started KFC. We know that Pepsi Cola bought it for $1 billion. We get it. But he was 65 years old when Kentucky decided to reroute a major road that went right past his restaurant. He's 65 years old. He's holding a 3x5 card with the recipe on it. And he's got a building he can't even pay the rent for. And he decides, I got to change. I got to do something differently. And so he shops that recipe to one person, and they say no, and then two people, and then five people, and 10 people, and 100 people. And when we did our research on it, we found that he had talked to over 1,200 investors before someone said, yeah, you know what, Harlan? That sounds amazing. And is it any surprise that he was on TV well into his 80s, well into his 90s, mixing it up with that silly costume, but he didn't care. He was out there being extreme, saying, look, you know, we're different. We stand for something. And he built a $1 billion franchise. He was a nobody with a pretty darn good finger-looking chicken, right? And so you speak all over the world, and you stand up in front of an audience and you say, raise your hand if you think what you're doing is a little more classy than broiling chicken in the oven. Of course, everybody's on their feet. Tell me if what you're doing is more sexy, is more complex, a little more thoughtful than, you know, dropping a few thighs and legs into some, boiling oil. Everybody's on their feet. And then you say, so then how come you're not working hard as an 80-year-old man, right, who laid it all on the line for a piece of fried chicken? It gets silly. It gets silly.
This is the extreme behavior. It's Moby Dick. I mean, you're Ahab. You got to find your white whale. And, you know, I started with your story, and I could tell a bunch of stories about you. But, you know, the world record's a white whale. And you go out and you run, win, lose, or draw. But it's the fact that you're taking action that gives you the lessons and the learning, and you do adjust as you go, and you get better. But let's move to the second one here. And I'm actually holding your cards that you sent me, and the card says there are no sick days. And it's got the boxing gloves. A disciplined action, and you know, I'm huge on this. I think personal discipline is really, really one of the most compelling attributes a human being can have. I actually think it's the cornerstone. If you just take disciplined action, you're going to do a lot better than a lot of people. Share your thoughts on that.
One of the keystone thoughts that we have that's right up, I mean, we are so in alignment, it's unbelievable. One of the observations we come away from the book, from studying these ordinary people who do outrageous things, is that if you stop doing the right thing before it starts working, you've done the wrong thing. Often people say to me, Dan, I'm doing what I think I should be doing. When's it going to start working? How do I know it's the right thing? You know, we have these questions. You have these questions. I have these questions. We have these questions in the back of our head saying, I'm doing everything I think I should be doing. I'm following my dream. When's it going to start working? The answer is, I don't know, and you don't know. And no expert in the world can tell you exactly what day of the week, what hour of the day it's going to start working. So if you stop doing the right thing before it starts working, you've done the wrong thing. It's amazing the number of people who say to me, I tried that once. Oh, we looked at that a year ago. And they imagine that that automatically makes them amazing. You said it time after time after time. You look at what separates ordinary dudes from the people who are doing extraordinary things. It's that they wake up with a plan and agenda, and they do what they need to do every day.
That's it. It's just discipline. And it's, again, it's like brute force. And you just continue to take action until something happens. And it always does happen if you stay the course. With sales,
it always happens. You know, sometimes you hear people making these quotes saying, well, like Einstein, you know, if you do the same thing multiple times, you shouldn't expect different results. That's a definition of insanity. And I go, bullshit. How do you think they cut... granite. If you ever watched a video on YouTube, it's kind of fascinating and oddly boring all at the same time. This guy with a little hammer and a chisel, he makes his marks in the granite and then tink, 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 and then goes tink, 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 and does that tinking for a crazy number of times until this massive piece of granite splits right in half. He did the exact same thing, the exact same way, time after time after time after time, and guess what? It worked.
It's the final strike that does it? No, it's all the strikes that went into it before that finally caused the granite to give way.
Right on.
That's how it works in everything else. If for salespeople that are listening to this, that's prospecting. The first call is a no, lots of little no's. That's the path that we're on. It's the final one that feels like it worked, but it was all those things leading up to it that really got you there. Okay, so this is the distinction that I made in this book, and you know this. But the first two are more self-oriented. It's the extreme behavior that you take. It's the disciplined action that you take. And then the book takes a turn and it flips. It's not about you. It's about... giving, and it's your card says give from your heart, not your head. And we've talked about this because this is a dramatic shift that you made in your own personal life, and you weren't giving, and you recognized that at some point the baggage that you had between your ears was the obstacle, and you realized you had to make a shift.
Yeah,
share that with us.
Well, you're right. I mean, being extreme is will get you through a piece of granite, right? That discipline and being extreme, goodness gracious, you'll crack some granite that no one else can do. But you also build up some self-involvement, some behavior that will ultimately, like a poison, destroy you from the inside out. And so what we observed in ordinary people who did amazing things that they didn't deserve to achieve, was that they were givers. They didn't just take, man, they gave. Maybe it was technology innovation. Maybe it was just a smile on their face. As I observed great companies, I saw this pattern of them defying industry experts. Even when it looked like they were making a stupid decision on paper, they were doing things that just made them awesome, whether it was Costco giving away free samples, whether it was Zappos saying, walk around in our shoes for 7 days, it doesn't matter, whether it was UPS or United States Postal Service deciding how they paid their drivers, or whether it was Starbucks saying, we're going to give health care to anybody who works 30 hours, even though it costs us a lot and a lot of money. Companies who give, people who give, they attract to themselves, you know, what you call your ideal customer, what I call, you know, great karma. It kind of sounds foo-foo, or you know, something like, well, we can't see that working, so we're not going to do it. But then you wonder why, you know, things might not be working the way you want them to be. Try giving. And there's a really amazing story that goes back to the 1920s. It's in the book. We'll be out of time if I tell it, but it's just an amazing story about this young lady.
I love the story. It's a heartbreaking story.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? What I think is the cool carry on to that story, by the way, you've got teasers from both Anthony and myself, you got to go read that story, but is the fact that Ford Motors' first marketing campaign was based off this amazing story of this girl who gave. And it's just super awesome. So if you're not giving right now, if you're taking, if you have this mindset of I will give you something if you give me back something, look, there's no room for that if you're a high performer.
That's trading, though, isn't it? I mean, you give me and I expect reciprocation, then it's not really giving, it's trading.
It's trading. Yeah, that's exactly right. And some of our sales training is based off of that. I will pitch you, Anthony. I'll pitch you, but you have to tell me that by the end of this presentation, you're going to give me a yes or no. And it's like, well, I'm not going to do anything that, you know, I'm not going to let you step on me. I'm only going to do things where I know I get the outcome I want. And look, those things will keep you safe and you might make a great income. No one's saying you're going to be in the poorhouse. But if you're someone who wants more for yourself, if you're someone who says, I want to achieve outrageous success, doesn't matter what everyone else is around me, I want more, then you have to throw away those notions and start being a giver.
It's interesting because that's been my whole strategy, you know, since I started writing, was to just give everything away, give the content away as much as I can. And the more I give and try to create value for other people, the more it comes back. And I had a consultant once call me and tell me I was doing it wrong and that I shouldn't be giving anything away. I should just be hinting and teasing to it on the blog and then making people pay me to get the content. And then he ended the conversation by saying, and how are you getting all these gigs? And I went, okay, asked and answered.
Yes. Yeah. Isn't that amazing? You know, and I think you've nailed it dead on, which, you know, you and I both hear the same thing. It's like, oh, pull them in, you know, via this kind of like bait and switch toward us. Of course, no one uses those words. But and then they say to you, well, you know, how do you have the most popular blog on in the universe, Anthony? You know, you have probably, it's called The Sales Blog. So, of course, one of the most popular sales blogs on the planet. Well, how does that happen? Well, here's how it happens is I'm giving you my best stuff every day. I'm not holding back. I'm not trying to do what's gimmicky. I'm obsessing about ways that I can continually give value. I know you don't say that for yourself, but as a friend, I mean, that's what I see. That's what I observe. And it's no wonder that you've got thousands of people getting your content and using it and then calling you and saying, hey, dude, I've been reading your newsletter for 2 years. Why don't you come speak to us in South Africa? Or why don't you come down and... Right? That's how it happens.
It's exactly how it happens. And, you know, you don't know who's reading you on the other side. You're giving and people are taking value. And at some point they raise their hand when they need help and they know you as a value creator. And that's part of the giving. But the other part, you know, it strikes me, and you're the same way. I mean, some of it is giving feels good. It's great to help people. And I had a lot of people when I tried to step into, you know, the web and build a community, I had a lot of people that reached their hand out and pulled me up. And you know, you're obligated when you're at a place where you can reach your hand out and pull somebody up to pull them up. And it's a great thing to be able to do. And that's one of the reasons you want to achieve success, so you can reach up and pull other people up with you. Let's get to this last one, because this last one is the why, and it's the human strategy. And to me, it just reads like love. But share what this last piece is. I've got it all laid out now in front of me. My cards actually make a book cover, right?
That's right. How cool is that?
That's awesome.
Right. And we're actually, everyone who buys the book, you're actually going to get those as well. It's pretty cool. We're sending them out 30 days after the book. We don't even say this anywhere. I guess the people listening to your podcast will figure it out. That once they get it, 30 days after they buy the book, they're getting the first one with a handwritten note from me. Then 30 days later, they get the second one, then the third one, then the fourth one. They're actually a little bigger than those. They're postcard size. Those are a little note card size. But we're excited about keeping people coming back to Edgy. But the why is all about healing. You're right. It is about love. But, you know, people will pay just about anything to be healed. We talked about this, some great feedback on that hangout that we just had last week. I mean, whether you're Steve Jobs dying from cancer, whether you're a mom who's crying because you're heartbroken over a child who won't get well, who's in suffering from so much pain, you know, we will pay almost anything we have to be healed. And we get this when it comes to church. We get this when it comes to therapy. We get this when it comes to broken bones, sticks and stones, all of that stuff. But then when it comes to business, when it comes to being more productive, to achieving goals, as you said, to reaching out a hand and pulling people up, we all of a sudden stop healing. right? We go, well, look, you should have figured it out already. One of the observations we make in the book is that the same illogical behavior that makes someone act crazy and we look at them and go, what the heck are you doing? That's the same default wiring for how our brains are wired ourselves. And some people call it the reptilian brain. There's the crocodile brain. There's a lot of great books that have been written about different ways to describe it. But, you know, we're all pretty primal. And when you see the grass waving a certain way in the distance, your immediate reaction isn't, oh, wow, look at that awesome grass. Your immediate reaction is, oh, no, there's a lion. He's coming to bite my face off. And I have and everything that's in your body is like, oh, you're ready to go. And you're defensive. And maybe it's not. Maybe it's just the way the wind's blowing that one day. And thousands of years later, we still act the same way, whether it's in the boardroom or whether we're in the jungle. Pain and fear, they have lasting consequences. And for a lot of busy executives, they've spent years with a business suit on pretending like nothing's wrong. And it gets really painful when they start trying to open it up. And, you know, the reality is the person you're selling to might not be ignoring you. He might just need to be healed. Mm-hmm. Whether it be a car that gets broken down or a marriage that's on the rocks, or maybe he wants a promotion that's went to somebody else. There's a lot of healing that needs to go on. So you're looking to, how do I grow more sales? How do I be more of an influence? How do I get people to call me back? Heal them. Heal them. Everyone calls the healer. In every culture, whether it's a shaman, whether it's a physician, doesn't matter, whatever you call them, people call the healer.
Yeah, it's great strategy. Let me wrap up by asking you a couple things about the book. People can get it on Amazon, right?
Amazon, that's right, exactly. Yep.
And how do they get the little workbook that I got?
So we're going to give it away until we run out. We've got thousands of them. And I think for around the first 5,000 or so, we don't have that many left anymore because of the last few days. But we're giving it out. You buy the book, we're going to drop it in the bag. And look, we hope that book helps you take the book personally. Hopefully you can write some things down in the book that you would never say out loud to anybody else. But you'll know, and you'll get better, and it'll be better.
I've showed the workbook to people, and they're like, oh, my God, that's awesome. It's wonderful to have the little workbook that goes along with it. And this isn't a book like you've picked up before. First off, it's red and black, and the typeset is justified. it's carefully and thoughtfully done. The words are amazing, and the message is even better. And I really appreciate the work that you did putting this together, Dan. It's an awesome book. It's all mindset, where the whole world is worried about skill set. It's about the mindset. It's about who you are. And the book will definitely help you if you pick it up. And I appreciate you being here, my friend. And we'll send people to Amazon to get this, and I'll bring you back on soon. You can let us know how you're doing.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you for your help with the book. And for those listening, listen, you need skills, but you need will, too. This is a book about will, like you said. So if you need will, this is what this is all about.
And that is my friend Dan Waldschmidt. You can find him at danwaldschmidt.com, WALDSCHMIDT.com. I'm Anthony Annarino, and you can find me at thesalesblog.com or annarino.com. Either place will get you there. When you do show up, do sign up for the newsletter. It's the best work I do, and you'll get something in your inbox every Sunday. Until then, I'll see you next week in the arena.